Ой, чё он спирачи? Ты шоу? А по часть того, чё он спирачи, корец? Ой, я урос, адам той броун.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Conspiracy, the show. I'm your host, Adam Todd Brown. My guests this week are already losing their shit. I don't know why. It's not like anything.
You do.
It's not like anything happened the first time we tried to start this podcast. Jessica didn't start an electrical fire with her laptop or anything.
It wasn't even that much water.
Hey, I don't have a co-host this week, but like I said, a couple of guests. My co-hosts from the Trend Pony podcast, which you can hear on the Unpops Patreon and Supercast. Clickety-clack, clickety-clack.
Nay!
Jessica Singer and Jen Scott. Say hello, everybody.
Hello, everybody.
Love you.
Oh, man. I think the adrenaline from me spilling water made my edible hit.
Oh. That's very possible.
Oh.
Well, given the subject matter this week, it's a good time for your edible to hit.
Oh,
it's important,
yeah.
To the story for sure.
Because we're talking about a documentary, a very fun documentary, sort of fun. It gets dark at times.
Yeah. I would say a good documentary. I wouldn't call it. Parts of it are fun. Parts of it are fun.
It's fucking fun.
Yeah.
I thought it was.
It's aggressively fun. I think it's fucking fun. Okay?
Most fun. Never had
Jen,
more fun.
Are you
fun.
From Chicago?
Maybe. Me and Sass go way back.
The it's Squatch.
Fun. Yeah.
So we're talking about a documentary series on Hulu called Sasquatch. 3 episodes, around 45 minutes each. Not too unwieldy.
Can I just say I was so pleased when I thought it was going to be a movie, and then I saw a docuseries, and I was like, God damn it. And then I saw it was only 3 episodes, and I was like, hell yeah.
That is okay.
Yeah,
and
that's allowed.
This is something that was layered enough where it needed more than one episode.
I don't know that it needed all 3.
It could have been 2. The last 2 could have been edited into 1.
Yeah. And I think it may have
still been a movie.
Maybe even.
It could have been a 2-hour feature easily.
But you got to expect that these days. Everyone wants a series. It's a Duplass Brothers documentary, so that's a positive sign.
We're always ready for them.
I also heard recently that they're nice to work with.
I could see that.
And that makes me happy.
Yeah. Good, if so.
And, if so.
Yeah.
One time I was on set with Mark Duplass, and he was reading a hardcover book the entire time.
That's right.
Wow.
I was like, mad props. Like, he was so into just whatever he was doing. It was fabulous.
So this documentary is about an investigative journalist named David Holthouse. What did everyone think of David Holthouse?
I really liked him. I also liked the reveal as to why he got into investigative journalism. That was way later. The thing that happened to him when he was a kid.
Right.
It was a twist I was not expecting that made everything make way more sense. I really liked David.
I thought they did a really good job of establishing that we, as the audience, believe him to be a sane, like, variable. You know what I mean? Like, yes. We're like, okay, this guy gets it. And we think he's a little crazy, but it's all to prove a point.
Well, he's also a really good, like, investigator. Like, he always leaves, when he asks people questions about things, he always leaves holes in it to make sure that they're both actually talking about the same event.
Yeah,
I really like that. Where he's like, I'll never name the exact date of something when asking about it.
Yeah.
I
appreciate that he's very objective about it. He's not chasing one theory and just hoping that that theory is going to be true. Like, he actually peels back the layers of this because it's a crazy story.
Yes.
And it's something that he experienced. And did they ever go over? Because, okay, so it starts, can I say?
Yeah, it's set the scene. It's fall 1993.
It's just about
an animatic recreation. I like the animation.
I did too. I thought they did a really good job style-wise.
I like the disclaimer at the beginning that some of the interactions were recreated. It's like, you weren't talking about the animation, I hope, because I picked up that that's not what that really looked like.
This animation didn't happen in real life. Just seen it.
But it's like fall of 93, and he's going up to Northern California to Mendocino County, which is part of the Emerald Triangle that grows all the weed. It's right after the height of the war on drugs. And it's like where all the weed farms are that are really great and really terrible.
See, I feel like you're already condensing this in the way the documentary should have. Like,
exactly.
All you need is after the height of the war on drugs.
On the war on drugs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was unnecessary. But go on.
Which is like, we know about the war on drugs.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe we don't. Maybe we don't. This is for Gen Z.
Yeah.
They know about it. They know more than we do with some of that shit.
Yeah. Anyway, go on.
But, and there's, I just don't know if they ever went over if he was weed farming. It must have been for another article. He must have been investigating something, right?
Yeah, but he did say that he did a little work on the farm like the day after he got there. So he was there to work, but also clearly there for a potential article.
Yeah, I guess
you know how farming jobs go. It's just kind of like, I'm around.
Well, yeah, and like, you're gonna pick up some sketchy shit. I'm sure he was like, I'll see something and I'll write about it while I'm here too.
Yeah.
And then a guy busts in who's all methed out and is like, Sasquatch just pulled apart three men up at this other fucking place.
Yes.
And it's like, that's the beginning, right? That sets the stage.
Yeah, that is, he's basically everything you said. He's at this weed farm where he's been either working or doing journalist work, and these dudes bust in and go up to the boss of this place, and they're like, three dudes are dead, we saw the bodies, Bigfoot did it.
Yeah, and they're scared.
Very
like
scared.
I felt like that was a really important part of it too. Like, they seem terrified and methed out, and I also thought it was interesting that he's like, I do not tell this story because it's so scary.
Yeah, he was like, I never wrote about this because it like actually fucking scared me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's going to unnerve any person just being in the room when two other people come in and go, hey, I found three people murdered nearby.
Not only murdered, ripped apart.
Yes.
I thought also that this part was funny when they were like establishing the woods and they were trying to make like these beautiful, gorgeous Northern California woods that are like so majestic, look horrifying. And I was loving it. I was like, this is seriously one of the prettiest places in the world. And they're like, show the no trespassing sign.
It is. I've driven through Humble and like back
yes,
down.
Yes, all weed farms. Of course, no trespassing.
Yeah, but like the redwood, like they talk about how giant and dense the trees are, and it's like not an exaggeration. Like once
no, it's
you're
horrifying.
In there,
truly.
You do not know where you are. If you go in there, spin around three times, you're not going to know where the fuck you came from.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, and it's a sketchier area than people give it credit for. It's very pretty, but sometimes you can get murdered in pretty areas too.
It always kind of reminded me of Ojai, which was like my little area's version of that, where it's like, wow, it's so beautiful. Wait, there's hippies and racists here? What's
happening?
Yeah,
weird. California just be like that sometimes. So strange.
Yeah.
Like,
it's weird.
But also, I was like, immediately when they said the Emerald Triangle, I was like, oh, I've worked with people from up there. People from up there will like be the nicest people in the world to you, but also they will say crazy shit like it is absolutely nothing.
Yeah, like, and likely, yeah,
it's just, that's just how everyone is up there. So I was like, okay, this is where we are, got it.
Well, and Jen, you were talking to me about this too, is like whenever weed people from up there talk about their weed land, they're always like,
they talk about the land forever,
the yeah. land and how they fought to
how
keep
they
it.
Got the land and all the things they've had to do to keep the land, and that is usually what they'll tell you in the first 5 minutes of meeting them.
Yeah.
So he's at this farm, this incident happens, and now he starts hearing all these stories about Sasquatch and Bigfoot type creatures just like harassing the shit out of farmers all around the area. And it turns out to be an important detail that he starts hearing those stories after this killing happens. But that's for much later in the documentary. So this documentary is basically about him investigating this story. It's a story that he's been sitting on for a couple of decades.
And like the first episode is all Sasquatch based, and it's like finding the history of Sasquatch and people that have seen Sasquatch and showing all the footage and the
And it does. I think that episode does a good job of kind of explaining why it's not that crazy. That if this was a Sasquatch that did it, why it's reasonable that it would have happened where it did.
It was more logical, but reminded me of watching this Flat Earthers doc I watched, where they're just like, I think we've talked about it actually, but they're just like, this is the way it is, and this is why it makes sense. And
yeah,
you know, and I did text Jen when I was watching it that I loved the life partners that believed in Sasquatch.
They were amazing.
They were the highlight of the whole doc for me. They were really cute. He was like, you believe that Sasquatch like teleports? I was like, no, I don't. And they're just so cute.
Yeah, they were really fighting about whether Sasquatch is a real thing or like an alien or a supernatural being.
Yeah, like what type of sci-fi entity Sasquatch would fall under, like what powers they have. And also, I thought it was very different that each group of Sasquatch people talked about Sasquatch differently. I was like, wow, what a creative thing to believe in.
Oh my God. My other favorite guy from the first one is the guy that had the footage of Sasquatch from 1967. The cowboy guy.
Yeah. The Patterson Gilman tape.
Yeah. And he was like, someone was like, hey, have you ever heard of a Sasquatch doing anything violent? And he was like, no, they are the nicest, sweetest, most like.
Mystical. They're so gentle and majestic. He like talked about it like, what wasn't that they're that guy that got eaten by bears, Grizzly Man? He was like the Grizzly Man of the Squatch people. He was like, they're just so nice.
he was in it. There's a lot of what I'm guessing are really prominent Bigfoot and Sasquatch personalities in here, and I imagine he's definitely one of them, because he's one of the names attached to one of the most famous Bigfoot videos, which is the Gilman Patterson video. He's Gilman.
Yeah, they don't talk to Patterson, right?
He died. Dead.
Patterson dead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bigfoot. Bigfoot killed him.
we all made that joke immediately.
Bigfoot shot him, weirdly enough.
Bigfoot shot him.
You don't expect it to happen that way, but yeah, weird.
Bruh.
There's a lot of stuff about the history of Mendocino County and the Emerald Triangle. Huge concentration of weed farms in that area. And the thing about it, it's all deep, deep, deep in the woods. And the thing about the woods is they are the ocean of the land, in that we don't really have a reason to be in them.
Yes.
Get out of there.
Which makes it reasonable that that's where Sasquatch would live. Because really, all you got to do to survive in those conditions and also stay low key is develop a really keen sense of smell. Because if you're a place where humans never are and you can just instantly smell that there's a human nearby, you just fucking hide. So of course Sasquatch lives in the woods. I just figured it all out. But there's also weed farmers out there. And
who loves weed?
Sasquatch. They do talk about Sasquatches eating buds off the plants. And
I was like, adorable.
Yeah.
Adorable.
He's getting high, baby.
I love the idea of that just being like a cute snack. And they were really fucking selling me on Sasquatch.
They really were. I was like,
all right, I guess.
It reminded me of like when people convince me that there's ghosts. I'm like, okay, I guess you saw it. I guess it happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And
a ghost touched my butt.
A ghost has touched my shoulder before. That is true.
Adam, I know you're a ghost chaser. Have you been touched by a ghost?
No. Now, I've never seen a UFO. I've never seen a UFO despite spending a ton of time in New Mexico. So whatever.
Want it too bad.
Yeah.
I had it to a certain point. There was like 2 months where I felt like ghosts kept fucking with me. And then it ended with like, I had felt on my shoulder.
Jessica realizing she smoked too much weed almost.
Yeah.
No. And then I turned around and it was there outside. And I just, and then after like 3 things happened, I was like, I see you. I hear you. Please leave me alone. And then it didn't bother me anymore. It was freaking me out. That's what I've always been told to do.
Yeah, I went to Zach Bagan's haunted mansion in Las Vegas, and I had heard a long time ago that if you're in the room with a ghost, just say goodbye when you leave. And
yeah, well, I've heard that some of them you. Do want to I mean, want to be
everywhere saying goodbye by myself now.
Yeah.
Goodbye. So
basically every room you exit from now on, say goodbye to the ghosts that are there. Unless it was like built, you know, just a year or two ago or something like
damn,
that.
Damn, I did have the most ghost problems when I was just not like just with leaving places. Mm. Like not saying goodbye to anybody. Just being
that's
like,
that's a trip.
We nailed it. That's how you get haunted. You don't say goodbye to the ghosts. So I did appreciate that there was a bunch of history about the California Gold Rush in this.
Yes.
Because it does tie into the how that area turned out to be. But more importantly, we really romanticized the California Gold Rush as if it was not a straight up genocide.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Yeah, I had never learned. I learned about, you know, I'm from here. I learned about the Gold Rush my whole life. They spent like a month on it. And I genuinely had never put two and two together that, like, of course they killed a bunch of indigenous people during the Gold Rush. That story has never been told to me that way. And I was like, it felt like such a duh moment.
Guess yeah. what? If you went to public school and you learned something more than once in history, it was a lie.
That's pretty usually fucking yeah. true. They uh-huh. really tried to hammer in the same ideas every year for certain things.
Yeah, Gold Rush, Thanksgiving bullshit, and like everything else.
I helped write
Civil War.
Yeah.
I helped write and edit two different books that are all about that. When I was at Cracked, we put out two different books that are just about all the things you learned incorrectly in mm-hmm. school.
I think I might have shared this on here before, but I had a government teacher that was like, let's look at how the Constitution's written in our textbooks and let's compare it to an actual copy of the Constitution. And he pointed out like what parts weren't finished, what parts were like enlarged, that like were misleading.
Yeah.
And then we all researched that they were all made in Texas. Like all that, like it was like a lot of that.
Yeah, it's all very shady. So
yeah, the Gold Rush was a genocide.
Yeah, the Gold Rush was a genocide. They touch on that in this documentary, and I appreciate that. But let's get back to Sasquatch. So
Squatchy.
Holt House starts talking and asking people if anyone has Sasquatch stories. And at first, it seems like no one does. And then he puts a private investigator on the case. I was like, fuck, yes. You're hiring yeah. a private investigator to look for Sasquatch stories?
That's like from these parts too.
Right. And he does, you know, finally put him in touch with a few different people. This is the point where they start talking to the Bigfoot video guy, the Patterson-Gimlin film guy. I think I said his name incorrectly earlier. What Whatever. Do we think of that video?
I mean,
why was I sold on this video?
No, I immediately was like, he seems small. Yes. I was like,
it's kind of the end of the first episode and the beginning of the next episode.
Yes.
Is them talking about this video, which when they present it in the first episode, it's with nothing but people who are like, I was there standing across the water and it looked at me. And it's like he didn't have a British accent, but and then they
so like, I was standing energy. There across the water yeah. and it turned at me and it's that classic arm back and turn.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, classic. Yes.
And then
I was just like, and also it's 1967 is the video. I yep. think it's six.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, video quality was terrible in 67. Like,
right.
Blurry which, was like, wow, you did it.
Which would make it easier to fake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they open the second episode with an interview with a guy who was like, I was in a suit in that video. Yeah.
And he's like 5'8".
Yeah.
They go further to say that he's like 5'8".
And we got, honey.
And he's
I
like,
felt so tricked.
He's like, look at my right hip. I'm wearing my jeans. You can see my wallet. And I actually
he
could
doesn't
not
even have the bottom of the suit on. You couldn't see his wallet.
I couldn't see his wallet.
It kind of bulged around his ass.
Your brain just wants to fill in the blanks because it's not clear enough.
Yeah.
Yes. That is also very true. But I also love any form of media in which I feel like a magic trick was done and I was tricked. And that's definitely how I felt beginning of episode two.
Jessica had texted me, I feel like I believe in Sasquatch the same way I believe in ghosts. And I would like just didn't respond because I was like, wait till the next episode.
Well, but that was just, I was also obviously smoking during this whole thing. And I thought about that and I was like, yeah, like I believe that people believe they've seen it. And then I was like, wait, no, I've had experiences with ghosts. It's not the same. I've never had an experience with a Squatch.
I have.
Stop it.
Before that first episode ends, he gets in touch with a guy who is just awesomely named Razor.
Yes.
Do you think it's because he's so good at trimming?
Oh,
maybe.
I thought it was because he cut you.
Yeah, I wonder if it was like a fake nickname and his real nickname's Blade. And he's like, what? You changed it to Razor? That's not...
Scooter?
That's not enough.
Scooter!
Razor Scooter.
He's named after the Razor Scooter.
So he does say he remembers hearing this story. And he adds a couple details, that there were three Mexican nationals. Those were the victims. And that they were killed in the area of Spy Rock Road, which is as cool of an area as the name implies. If you like danger and potentially being murdered.
Murder!
It sounds really great. His story seems very believable. And then Holt House gets his text from the detective, and he's like, I can't do this anymore. We're getting into dangerous territory. And it's like, holy shit, did that private investigator talk to a Bigfoot who threatened him?
Bigfoot Mafia.
Bigfoot Mafia. Yeah, at that point when his life gets threatened, if you still think it's Squatch, what are you doing?
Yeah.
It would have been funny, though, if like a Bigfoot lawyer showed up wearing a suit and shit. We will sue you.
I don't picture the whole suit. It's just a collar and tie. And then it's a little pocket protector in the fur.
Like Chewbacca.
Yeah, exactly. I like that.
Like how Chewbacca would dress for the job. Clearly. Dress for the Chewbacca you want.
Not the Chewbacca you have.
So this private investigator gives up. He's like, I'm not doing this anymore. You're going to get us both killed by a Sasquatch. And they start getting into Spy Rock Road a lot. And this place sounds fascinating. It is apparently controlled by the Hells Angels. Very hard to get to. And, there's lots of they talk about like some strange murders that have happened there. And this is why I hate that they spend so much time on the war on drugs, because it's getting really interesting. And then they talk about the war on drugs for like 20 minutes and it's very distracting.
I had a hard time getting through that part. I was like, yep, I do know about it.
Do they talk about immigrants working on weed farms before or after the war on drugs? After, huh?
After.
Yeah.
And also, I feel like that part was very glossed over a bit.
Me too. I wish they spent the time they did on the war on drugs on immigrants, like trying to find jobs and work and the danger. But maybe
they did, and it was really sad, so I just don't remember.
Yeah, I remember
was a big chunk, but
not long after Trump got elected, I remember reading a story about all these Northern California farmers who were upset that their farm workers were getting deported, but also they all voted for Trump. It's like, so you thought he wasn't going to deport your workers, just the bad people. It's like, you fucking idiot.
Yeah, spoiler alert, there's like no bad ones. It's all of them that they're trying to get rid of.
Exactly.
I mean, there's as many bad people as there are of any group.
We understand.
I just didn't. I'm painting with broad. My edibles are colliding. Sorry.
Edible collision. Just what Sasquatch would want, really.
So he calls a confidential informant and says, hello, can I speak to, and then they bleep it out. So at this point, I decided this confidential informant is named Fuck, because it's like just short enough and it sounds so.
Definitely not Chuck.
No, it's Fuck. Fuck.
Yeah.
He talks to an informant named Fuck. Did anyone catch his motel room? There's just a really brief shot where he's making phone calls in his motel room.
Yeah.
And it's got like an actual glass front door on it. I don't like that.
Oh, no. It was a very weird vibe of the motel room.
That makes me uncomfortable.
It was super strange.
Anyway, so this is where they talk a lot about David Holt House himself and about how a lot of his work has been him chasing his own demons in some respect.
Yeah.
I was like, when I first met David, not met, but like in the beginning, I'm like, ugh, that hair choice. And then they say that he went undercover with skinheads. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I would also wear my hair as long as possible post skinhead.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Investigation.
Yeah, that's a metaphor right on his fucking head. Right.
Yeah,
there.
Exactly.
I liked how well they portrayed the depth of him in this. Yeah. And also, I thought that it was really good that they got us to trust him before he even revealed any trauma to us, because that would have been the easy thing to do, was to just tell us what happened out the gates.
Also, it makes it so his trauma doesn't define him. I feel like sometimes when we learn characters, we learn their trauma first, and then that's like who they are.
Right. And I thought that they did just like a really good job of showing us that he had perspective, so that we were never like, I don't know if I trust this main character. We were always with him on the story.
Yeah, he's immediately very likable and trustworthy.
Yes.
Like, he also, I think part of what makes him so trustworthy is in the beginning, he's like, here's what I do know. I don't know. Yeah, like, yeah, I love that he's not like, this is what I'm sorting out to find. He's like, let's figure this out because this shit's weird.
Yeah, he's like, this. It's a story I heard. What do you want me to do?
Exactly.
It's the story I heard. Yeah, where he shares all that about himself. Like, he didn't have to do that. Like, the documentary would have worked without it. So
100.
That's an example of them adding stuff that necessarily didn't need to be there, but I'm fine with it. Just like the California Gold Rush stuff. Hell yeah. Include all that. Yeah. So maybe this episode is better than we said it was when we first started talking
about
it.
We were just like, we're sad now and we hate it. Back to Sasquatch, please.
This could have been a tweet.
Yeah.
I think it was so like emotionally draining. I mean, it's because I also needed to get stuff done, but I think I took a break like mid-episode two. For a while, like not in between episodes, but just mid episode two, I was like, let me get away from this for a second.
I watched it all the way through and did not stop.
Here's the thing. I also thought it was a movie at first, so I didn't start watching it until around 9 a.m. this morning. And then once I saw it was three episodes, I was like, shit, am I going to make it before I have to record?
Oh, you watched it today?
I did, yeah.
Oh, funny.
Yeah, it's fresh in my mind.
Yeah, I watched it Saturday.
Yeah, I watched it whatever day you texted me about it.
Saturday.
So
I've had a lot to think about.
We get a little bit of foreshadowing into a subject that's going to come up a lot later in this documentary, which is people are super duper racist in this part of California. He talks to Fuck, who tells him a story about two guys from LA who were murdered and buried in the area. And he tells that story incredibly racistly, which here's the thing.
The most.
Spell check did not correct the word racistly. So apparently that's a word.
Racistly.
Yeah, that's apparently a real word. You did that very racistly.
I'm going to use that word.
Hell yeah. And he drops the N-word a couple times. It's very bad. It does a good job of demonstrating something that they talk about later, which is how horribly racist that part of the country is. Which I think people underestimate. A lot of people want to think that...
People think that California is like some utopian, non-racist land. And really, it is so racist here. If you get out of LA at all, that it's just Trump signs everywhere still.
Even in LA, I've never lived somewhere as segregated as LA. Like
I have, but...
I mean, I've lived in places that didn't have a ton of people of color, like... South Dakota, but even then it's not like everyone was in one neighborhood, which is what they still really try to do in LA. Like it's
fucked up.
Super segregated here.
Yeah. I definitely romanticized the liberalness of the Bay Area before I moved there and like went there for college.
My God.
I did. And like even your first year there, and like if you're in your little college bubble, you do think it's like that.
Yeah,
you know. And then I like visited friends in Humboldt and I was like, yeah, this is going to be the really hippie.
New York is like that also, because it like New York is always blue in the elections and people think, oh, Hillary Clinton, fucking super liberal. Nah, Manhattan is liberal. Like New York City is liberal. If you go 45 minutes north, you get to upstate New York, and that is all racist retired cops. I lived in New York for 6 months and I split my time between Manhattan in upstate New York. And where I lived in upstate New York was fucking Copland. And it was the most openly racist place I've ever lived. It fucking sucked. Ugh. Anyway.
Northern California has a similar energy. When I went there for like a weed convention, it is so like they just, it's seriously fucked up the things they'll just say to you, like it's nothing too. And it's like, they just think that because you're in the same industry as them, maybe like that you understand where they're coming from on stuff. And people will just say really fucked up racist or just like horrible things to you.
Yeah. Yeah. The weed industry is not great at all.
No. The weed industry is pretty fucked up and racist. Yeah. Well,
is that when it starts in the documentary around where we're talking about, is that where it starts to show, like, cause I know it starts to show the migration of people going up north to want to live a free life and like not have running water and be away from things. And then it shows how that a lot of those people also were wielding guns and like,
yeah. And they get into how living in that situation can make you a little crazy. Like it's a very, yeah, isolated thing.
Yeah, even if you go out with those righteous intentions,
yeah,
like you start forgetting everything when you're super isolated, you know.
You still got to protect your crop, baby.
Yeah, Razor talks a lot about that. I liked Razor a lot. Razor was
yeah, great.
Yeah, he made a lot of really great points in this documentary whenever he talked. And one of the things he brought up about that thing where people would go up initially with, like you said, these noble intentions to just grow weed and be a hippie. And then they'd spend one season up there and come back a completely different person. Like, yeah, be it because they had money now or they had a drug problem now or something would change them. And then they'd go back the next season.
Yeah. And then they talk about like needing to do uppers to trim all night long and right, stuff like that too. Which is like, I don't know. I definitely saw that happen to some people. Like I personally have seen that happen and it's gnarly.
And it,
even with no trauma, trimming is the most mind numbing gig that like even if your job goes perfectly, trimming is so monotonous that you will lose it a little bit.
Yeah. If you're not listening to books the whole time.
And it, I felt like that was a really important detail because meth, that is a whole, like if you get really strung out on meth, the hallucinations that can happen are really insane. There's, I'll link to it in the notes. I should have sent it to you both so you could watch it. It's this news report. This happened in Omaha. This couple, I think they were just boyfriend and girlfriend. I don't think they were married. They were really young and they had been smoking meth all day. And they at one point called 911 and they're like, we're in our apartment in downtown Omaha. It's surrounded by Africans and they will not let us leave. And they end up on the phone with the police for 4 hours while the police are trying to figure out where they actually are. And they were in the middle of a field like 3 hours away, freezing to death. And the whole time they're like, we're in our apartment. It's surrounded. So once I heard that people were like smoking a ton of meth, I was like, oh, that might explain the Bigfoot thing too.
Oh, yeah. 100%. And like just some of the descriptions of Bigfoot being like someone's watching you in the forest. Like I've hallucinated in the forest.
You know who I just remembered that we haven't talked about is that former cop who was crying in his pickup truck.
Yeah.
That dude was lying. That motherfucker, something else happened and he replaced that memory with a Sasquatch memory. I was like, this dude is fucking lying.
Wait, so what was his story again that he just saw?
He just saw one.
And he starts like, sobbing.
And
I was like,
you murdered someone in the forest. That's what happened. And they screamed and that's what happened.
Because it was the scream that really made him start freaking out.
Yeah.
And he totally killed someone in the forest.
That was so strange.
That was so weird.
I've never seen someone talk about being scared the way he talked about being scared.
Because that motherfucker was scared of his own mind.
Yeah, that was really weird. I was glad they didn't spend too much time with that fucking weirdo.
I almost want to watch that again with the knowing that I think he's lying, to see if he does the things that liars do, which I'm sure he did. And that's why I immediately recognize it. But the whole, like, I bet he was like looking up and trying to disguise it as crying, which is why it was so dramatic.
Yeah. He kept looking straight ahead, like at the road, not at the camera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like trying to find his lies.
Yeah, that I had it in the notes somewhere, but who knows?
I think we skipped over the rails.
Yeah, that guy. Ugh. So
I'm glad you remembered that, Jen, though, because I blocked that out.
Oh my God, it was so weird. I was like, why would you even agree to go on camera if you were just going to lie and cry like that? He's been waiting for that opportunity to cover for himself.
Yeah, they're going to find a body out there someday.
They won't. There's so many bodies.
Yeah, that's true.
they're going to find that body.
Because again, it's the ocean of the land.
Yeah.
That's what the woods are. So he has another meeting with a confidential informant who says, you're looking for those three Mexican guys that killed back in 1993.
Oh, right.
And I don't think we ever learned this guy's name, but he is a very prominent figure in this documentary. He's once again reminded his life might be in danger. And no one wants to talk about this guy except one dude who is, again, awesomely named Ghost Dance.
That's his name?
His name was Ghost Dance.
He's one of my favorite talking heads in the whole thing because he doesn't give a shit. He says he's never seen a Sasquatch, so he doesn't believe in it. He's like, well, I've never seen it with my two eyes, so no.
Yeah, which is kind of a sketchy way to approach it. Like, I've never seen a California condor, but they exist.
Yeah, but he's been up there for a long time.
That's true. One's never come into my store. So he brings up another murder that happened in 2013, which spins off into a whole other plot line in this documentary. We're getting to the point where I don't want to give too much more away, but
that part was just goes to show you people get fucking murdered up here like it's nothing.
Yeah, it was a guy named Hugo. He was sleeping in his tent guarding a weed growing spot, and someone just shot through the tent.
That was the really sad part. Yeah.
And they interview his niece, and she's still super distraught over it.
Yep. It's so sad.
Yeah,
it's so fucked up.
He was the best uncle. Oh, that's what she says. It's like so sad.
Yeah.
But there's also that meth lady in the car.
Oh, yeah.
He meets this lady in a parking lot to talk about the murder, and she talks about a completely different murder again.
One that her 5-year-old son witnessed.
Yes.
Yeah. She says that.
That was so. Ugh.
Two men were shot, and that her son was close enough to it that he got blood spatter on his face and tasted it a little.
God, I hope he was young enough where he just doesn't remember it.
Sounds like she remembers it enough that he remembers it.
He was five, so I think
that's
he,
pretty old, yeah.
He remembers. Because
sometimes if you're like under six, your brain can be like, let's get rid of that.
My grandmother on my mom's side died when I was in kindergarten or about to go to kindergarten. So I would have been like five. And I vividly remember walking in the living room and seeing my sister just sobbing. And like, I don't remember much else, but it like that part, I think was
formative memory.
Yeah. So man, if you're five and you see two people get shotgunned to death and the blood splatters on your face, I feel like you're going to remember it.
Yeah. Also, that lady, she got in the car with him for the interview and offered him a hit of meth. So just to let you know how like openly people use meth and talk about murder.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And he offered to buy her a drink and she said no and lit her meth pipe in the bar. I'm pretty sure.
I like that. I mean, I don't like, but it's interesting that this place is so violent and just known like so scary to people that he even interviews a cop who's like, I'm not going to appear on camera. I fucking killed a cartel guy in a shootout a few years ago.
Yeah, hell no.
Like, I forgot about that.
No one wants to appear on camera.
Except for
a lot of people.
Lies.
Yeah.
Except Ghost Dance. Yes.
Yeah, who didn't do anything.
I love Ghost Dance.
And so he goes poking around on Spy Rock Road.
Where they immediately say, don't go there.
Yes.
Please, please, please. do not go there.
Yeah, and then he's there.
Yeah.
I feel like that's starting to become like a trope in documentaries.
Yeah, where, like, yeah, don't do it.
Or they'll be interviewing someone who's like, oh yeah, that person's never going to talk to you. Next scene, that person sitting down for an interview. It's like, oh, I didn't see that coming. It's
always funny, though.
Yeah. So, sure enough, he goes up there and starts asking questions. And he's told by a few different sources that the murder was ordered by a high-level grower, possibly in retaliation for getting the grower's daughter strung out on heroin. And one of about 50 compelling theories that come after this.
Yes.
One thing we do find out, though, is that the legendary Bigfoot, actually the name of a well-known weed grower in the area at the time, Bigfoot Gary. What a great fucking name.
Can you imagine? I want to be called Bigfoot Gary.
I thought
big feet for my height.
I thought it was funny enough when they were like, oh yeah, people called him Bigfoot. And then it's the meth woman who in the car is like, oh, Bigfoot? Yeah, I know him. His name's Bigfoot Gary.
Yes.
Oh, that's not as cool.
It was so funny, though, because they also did a thing that was very documentary-y where they were like, yeah, so people keep saying that there's murders by Bigfoot. And then it's like, so we talked to Bigfoot Gary. Like, so you guys trying to say without saying that Bigfoot Gary might have murdered these people.
Yeah, but then.
But then.
Yeah,
he's just a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like, seems like not a murderer, just not nice.
And I think one of the things that might be informing Jen's opinion there is that at one point, Bigfoot Gary's wife calls and goes, my husband's not a murderer. He's a dick. But he's not a murderer.
That's the best part. And then he's like, is Bigfoot Gary there? Can I just talk to him? Or do you need to? And then she just hands the phone to Bigfoot.
He's like, can he talk to you?
And he's like, why do they call you Bigfoot? And he's like, I got big feet. What do you want?
But we eventually find out that Gary wasn't even there in 1993.
Yeah, more like Bigfoot, not very.
There was another Gary. He needed a nickname.
The other Gary.
So, yeah, from there, like, I don't want to give away too many details from there.
Like, that's a good spot.
Because it really starts taking some twists and turns, and it seems like what happened is going to be one thing kind of right up to the end. And then what they settle on for an explanation is just, mwah, so good. It's so good. Granted, probably a hate crime, and the people involved are monsters, but oh man, that the meth-fueled planning that went into it, and the plan they came out of it with, amazing.
I am so happy I was on this, because I wouldn't click something that was called Sasquatch to watch without giving some exposition of it being like this. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, oh, a Sasquatch, whatever.
Yeah, once I was like, what is this going to be tone-wise? And then the opening was produced by the Duplass brothers, and I was like, I'm fucking in.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll watch anything those fuckers make. I really, really will.
Yeah, and I actually didn't know this was a Duplass brothers thing until I started watching it. And then I was like, oh, fuck yeah, this is going to be good.
What do you think their homes look like? Just like conspiracies all over the place?
What if they live in that motel room from room 104?
Probably.
Well, Mark's married to what's her name, who's really funny, and I feel like she just keeps
dissecting my joke that I just made.
Yeah,
sorry. I started to really think about what their houses look like, and I'm like, I feel like very clean.
I looked up their wedding registry online.
They're rich, so definitely.
Yeah, I mean, if you're rich and don't have a clean house,
the assignment seriously.
You can be rich and not have a clean house.
No, I said if you're rich and don't have a clean house, what are you doing? Yeah, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
You could be employing people.
Oh, really? You're taking away jobs with your messy house being rich.
Yeah. It's like actors who do their own stunts. It's like, you selfish prick. Let a stunt person do that.
What an asshole.
So what did we think of this documentary all around?
Thought it was really fun, as I said up top.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd give it like 8.5 or 9 out of 10. Honestly, I really, really enjoyed it.
Also for the dark, like what darkness is in it, they still do a really good job of presenting it that it made me not super depressed. Cause it was a lot of, again, stuff that like you already know is a systemic issue, you know?
Yeah. And it's, yeah. I mean, the racism is a problem. And it
I'm already super depressed about things that were brought to attention in this.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was pretty well executed. I do think it was a little too long, but I mean, at least it wasn't 6 episodes, which is what.
Oh, God, it could have been too. They could have really stretched a bitch out and had really more interviews could've. And shit.
Yeah.
But it also could have been a 90-minute documentary.
Yeah.
Yes.
I could have seen a different filmmaker like trying to make all those different theories into one episode. So mm-hmm. you're like following like the rape theory or the, I don't want to give away all the theories, but, and then you get to the end of the episode and they're like, nope, wasn't that. We'll talk about a different one next time. It's like, fucking don't bore us. Get to the chorus. So I appreciated that this wasn't that long. I thought everyone in it was relatively likable except for a bunch of the criminals who seem like some racist fucks.
Yes.
But most of the talking heads are fine, except the sobbing cop who,
And also I liked that nobody who is bad is glamorized.
Right.
There's no glamorization of anything happening that was terrible, which is really refreshing. Cause I feel like so many documentaries like glamorize horrible murder.
Yeah. Yeah. They sure do.
Yeah.
And it was very much not that in this. It was a very, let's get down to business.
I agree.
Yeah. And it doesn't end the way you're expecting. I would say I did actually though, at one point watching it, have that thought like, is this what they're doing? Like, I don't even want to say, but I did have the thought that maybe they just, you know, I don't
know.
Everyone go watch this, please.
Everyone watch it so we can talk.
Tweet at us so we can talk about it with you.
Yeah.
We'll have
maybe
all
we'll
of
talk
you
about it more. And we'll talk about the ending maybe on Trend Pony.
Oh,
a
little bit of promo for Trend Pony.
I mean, just an idea.
That's smart. I like it.
Why did you say idea like that?
Idea.
Just an idea.
I don't know. I've been talking for like 4 hours.
That's a good point. We should probably wrap this up. What do we have to plug? You should listen to Trend Pony on the Unpops Network, patreon.com/unpops or unpopsnetwork.supercast.tech. If you're not listening to it, hey, fuck you. It's a podcast I host with Jessica Singer and Jen Scott. Our guests
that's
today,
us.
That's them.
That's us.
We should maybe record another episode of that soon. Like me.
Yeah. Yes.
I leave for Costa Rica on Thursday, on Saturday.
We're into scheduling. So this is just plug, everybody. She's leaving the country.
Jessica, what do you have to plug?
Jen and I are on a show in Chicago. On August 25th, please come to that. It's Women Crush Wednesdays at My Buddy Chicago. I've never been to Chicago. Jen is from Chicago.
True.
Chicago's great.
We're going to have so much fun.
It'll be really fun.
I don't have any shows in LA, but I do have.
When is this coming out? I have.
Tomorrow.
Oh, great. Great. I have Chirp and Turf, which is August 12th, a Thursday. I have a show in San Clemente on the 13th. And you can check my Instagram for more because there's definitely more. Woohoo.
Woohoo.
Yeah.
I don't have any shows. Don't come see me. Don't come find me.
Find him. I'm
still staying inside. All right. Let's get the fuck out of here. Jessica, say goodbye.
Bye.
Jen, say goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, everybody. We love you.